Let's talk about sex, Jimmy. Let's talk about you and me.
That is
coming in hot.
That is salt and pepper.
Push it, baby. Today we're talking sex.
It's none of your business.
The importance.
The
importance of sex in a relationship. In doing this show, you know, my algorithm is really tuned to a lot of relationship and dating, sex, divorce, everything. Everything that's in the Jim Sexton
really
universe.
Fucked up your algorithm.
Oh my, it's the worst.
Yeah.
I used to be like comedians and sports, and now I got to deal with this shit all the time.
I know.
But
sorry, not sorry.
We're gonna kick off with this this clip here of this woman who looks like she's maybe preaching or giving some sort of speech about kind of how men and women view sex differently, and I think it opens up a big discussion about the importance of it in marriage.
Men don't want sex, ladies. They just don't. They don't want sex. They need sex. Some of the men were like, girl, what you talking about? I want it. No, you don't want it. You need it. It's an absolute necessity for men. The problem is he doesn't want to have to beg for it. He doesn't want to always feel responsible to initiate sex and intimacy. And here's how a man deals with rejection. The first time you reject him, it's like, okay, no problem. The second time you reject him, he stops trying. The third time you reject him, he's no longer interested, and he literally disconnects. He turns distant, he turns cold, he'll climb into bed, he'll watch a little bit of TV at night, turn his back to you, and go to sleep.
In your experience, is there sort of a disconnect in, like, do women understand what it means to men, and do men understand how it's different for women? Because I think that's a big problem.
I think men and women have a hard time understanding each other, and I think that lack of understanding leads to a lot of miscommunication and misinterpretation in relationship. I talk about this a lot in my book in a lot of different sections on a lot of different topics, including when it comes to sex. We don't hear what the other person doesn't say. That's one of the reasons I've been so unbelievably critical of this very recent trend on social media about why do we have to do the emotional labor of telling our partners how we feel? Because I just feel like that's so unbelievably counterproductive to say that it's a weakness to want to know or ask your partner about what's going on with them. I think men's bodies and women's bodies are different. I don't think that shouldn't be controversial to say, because it is something both sides say to their convenience. Like, if it suits their argument, they'll acknowledge men's bodies and women's bodies are different. Mm-hmm. But if it doesn't, then they're like, well, we can be just the same as it, but we can't. We have different bodies. And that's not, by the way, it's not a swipe on trans people. I think a trans woman and a woman who was assigned, you know, female at birth, have different lived experience. I have a number of women, trans women friends, a number of women friends. To say I have trans women friends is not to say that trans women aren't women. That's not what I'm saying. What you're saying is that this person has a very different lived experience. Someone who's transitioned gender has a completely different experience. They were born into a different body than the body that they were assigned to. So I get it, but these are different experiences. So men and women of every ilk have different experience of their bodies. And I think that I am learning, I continue to learn, that women's bodies are very much impacted by hormones in ways that men's may not be, or the impact of our hormones, like testosterone, is more consistent throughout the month or throughout the day than a woman's body might be. You know, I got such a laugh many months ago when a bunch of women in the comments talked about, like, ovulation and how, oh yeah, when a woman's ovulating, how she's, like, so hypersexual. Again, not all women, some women, many women, enough women that a bunch of them in the comments were like, oh, she was ovulating, that's why she was like that. And then there's a period of time where it's like, oh yeah, now I'm not the slightest bit interested. So I do think some communication would be very helpful in the situation that this preacher was describing, which is, you know, if a man, I will say, as a man, there is a unique pain in having your romantic advance rejected. Okay. Whether it's someone who you're shooting your shot, like you're asking them out and they say no, that is a unique pain to have the, because it takes a certain amount of courage to say like, oh, maybe we would get together sometime and have that person say, oh yeah, no, I'm sorry. I don't like you that way, or I wouldn't be interested in you. And you know, that's hard. Like it's a hard, hard thing to have happen. It happened to me when I was a young man quite a bit. And I have to say, like it, I remember that pain. I remember the embarrassment that came with it.
Big time.
And there's a way to do it that it's not quite as painful. Like, you know, oh, look, you're so wonderful. You're so lovely. You're so, like, by the way that I think any decent human being would do to another person who's put themselves out there in that fashion. So I do think we all owe each other the common courtesy of trying to have a person who's approached you appropriately to reject them appropriately if that's what's necessary. So that's number one. Number two is if you are in a relationship with someone, and this woman was talking about husbands and wives, you know, if you're married to someone and they have the courage to express a sexual desire or need to you, for you, okay, not saying, hey, I'm proposing a threesome, saying, hey, you're my spouse. I find you attractive. I'd like to be with you in this moment. This is not the way you should parse it, probably. But if you said, you know, in sum and substance or in behavior, like, oh, you know, maybe it's a little time for a little romance. To be rejected, it's hard. It's painful. You're expressing a need. Anytime you express a need, I know as a man, when I express a need, it's hard for me to express a need. I like to do most things myself. But there are some things I can't do myself. And so, you know, and by the way, some of the things people do for each other in relationship, they could do themselves, but sex is not one of them. So when you've decided, okay, this person is going to be my, if you're in a monogamous relationship, this person's going to be my sexual outlet and I'm going to be their sexual outlet, to express need to your partner, hey, I would like this. This is something I need right now. This is something I would enjoy right now. And to have your partner reject it, it's painful, but there's a way to do it that it's not so painful. If you say, you know, I'm just not feeling it right now. Like I'm just, that's where I am in my cycle right now. Or listen, I'm super stressed from work today. Or like, oh my God, I'm so exhausted. And then maybe if you want to be really kind, throw them a bone. Throw them a, you know, but you know what? Maybe this weekend, you know, when the kids are going to be with my folks, maybe we'll have a little romantic time then. Or, oh, listen, tomorrow, like I'm so wiped out today, but maybe tomorrow morning, if we're both in the mood, you know, we both wake up a little bit early. Like, why not let your partner know that this isn't about them, that this is about you and where you're at? Or if it is about them, like, hey, you haven't talked to me all day and now you're showing up and you want some sex. Why not say to your partner, like, hey, look, you know what? I normally love being physically connected to you, but like you came home, you didn't say five words to me, and now you want to have sex? Like you didn't like touch me once all day. Like, why wouldn't you? And by the way, that's a teachable moment for your partner. Your partner might be like, listen, I'm sorry. I just had like such a stressful day and I came home in a terrible mood. And even right now, like, I just feel like maybe like sex would like help me get some of that aggression and stress out a little bit. Like, we would understand each other better if we just talk to each other about what's going on, instead of thinking about everything as a power dynamic of, well, I don't owe you this. Well, I don't owe you that. Well, I don't owe you that. Well, I don't, okay. We don't owe each other anything. It's 8 billion people on the planet. We don't owe each other a goddamn thing. Like, we don't have to do any of this. Like, we created societies, we created families, we created all these rules. There are all artificial constructs. We created them for a purpose. And that purpose was to try to figure out a way for all of us to peacefully coexist and to thrive in smaller and larger groups. But a very popular permutation of that is monogamy and monogamous relationships. So if you have decided this is a person, then you do owe each other some things. You do owe each other some things, or delegate. Just say, yeah, I'm not interested in you sexually, but you can go outside and get that sexuality some other way, whether it's porn, whether it's whatever. So one of the things that I do think that a lot of men are in my office who have made mistakes when it comes to sex. So they have had affairs. They have just allowed their relationship to turn into something where sex was no longer part of the equation between the two people. And I have a lot of women in my office in the exact same position or on the opposite side of that same equation. Very rarely did these people mean to screw their relationships up. And very rarely is it a perfect villain and a perfect victim. It's usually just two people that like they took a wrong turn and neither of them had the courage to like stop and go, hey, listen, we took a wrong turn somewhere. Can we figure this out? I do agree with this person that, you know, the first time something happens, maybe there's some hurt feelings. The second time, third time, people start to shut down. Mm-hmm. And when you shut down, that's really where it gets dangerous, because that's where people start making much bigger decisions and choices in ways that I think are going to be really antagonistic to the relationship. And, you know, look, if you signed on for each other and to be each other's everything and to be each other's primary partner when it comes to anything sexual, I think you owe each other at least a discussion and an attempt in good faith to meet each other's needs.
So you mentioned these couples who kind of find themselves stuck. This was a post from the subreddit Marriage that went up this week. I think that any chance of having sex again with my wife of nearly 20 years has ended. My birthday was earlier this month and she was out of town. I knew she'd be tired when she came home, but would be going out in the town the following weekend. She had a day off from work before leaving town, so I tried to initiate. She said, "You couldn't have tried that 30 minutes ago. 90% of the time I try to initiate, she's too tired, and I can no longer put myself under the pressure and anxiety to perform to a standard I'm not capable of. I have no intention of ending my marriage. This seems like pretty petty and childish to throw away 20 years over this, but I think I'm done with this aspect of our relationship." Now, here's, he says, "I'm not cheating on her, and she's not cheating on me." So I guess that means we're done having sex. So a couple things here. When you find yourself in this spot, what do you do? And if you, in your experience, if you see a loveless, sexless marriage.
Yeah. I think you get fucking divorced.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
Like I have no intention of ending my marriage. We're just not going to ever have sex again. Like, okay. What is
but,
that?
But almost isn't that like,
I mean, if you're super religious, then you believe that your marriage is a covenant that's between, you know, you and an omnipotent creator deity, then sex doesn't have very much to do with it, I guess.
But, yeah, I did skip a line here. He says, "Religiously speaking, I refuse to masturbate or look at porn." Yeah. So this is a pretty extreme version of this.
So this is a crazy person? Yeah, this is a person who's basically saying that, you know, I refuse to masturbate or look at porn, which, by the way, like, so you're telling me you haven't had sex in that long and you haven't and you haven't looked at porn?
That's just like, going to explode.
He's going to blow. Yeah. Like, I have to tell you, like, that is not.
But
if you were like, "I've gone a week without sex or porn or masturbating," like, that's like, do you even shower? Because at that point, like, you're just scrubbing just that happen. Area and it would just happen. You know, I can't. That's insane.
What I think is crazy is that this idea, this is pretty extreme, but I think there are plenty of sexless marriages out there that is normal or accepted is crazy to me.
I have a question for you. How much do you hate yourself that you think this is how little you deserve?
Yeah, right.
I mean that.
Right.
Like, how much do you hate yourself that you think this is how little you deserve?
It's pretty bare minimum,
like,
man.
Like, you deserve, again, I think we are in a culture where we all think we deserve more than we do. Like, we're ungrateful. Like, we are ungrateful. On the subway ride to the studio today, I was sitting on the 7. And there was a guy a little bit probably younger than me. And he had his son with him. And his son was severely developmentally disabled. And was, you know, reacting to the stimulation that was going on. And it was just obvious, like, not verbal, but reacting verbally. And I just thought to myself, like, man, like, I am so grateful that, like, A, my children are, like, perfectly healthy and well, you know, and B, that, like, there are people in the world that, like this person obviously loves his child so much. And, you know, like, he was kind of patiently, you know, guiding him around. And I thought to myself, like, what a beautiful person that is, like, to just, like, you love your child so much the same way I love my child. But, like, the fact that, like, at the hardest moment of parenting, that I didn't just stop and go, like, you know what? I'm so lucky. Like, I'm so lucky that I'm not dealing with what that guy's dealing with. Like, the thought that, like, someday when I'm gone, my kids will be totally fine. Mm-hmm. They'll be totally fine, self-supporting individuals who can go out and have careers. And I won't have to worry about, like, are they being taken care of? Is someone going to take care of them? Because this is clearly a person that's going to need care. You know, and thank God there are, you know, institutions and individuals out there that will be there to help, right? But, like, there are so many things that we could be dealing with that we're not dealing with. Instead, we're, like, bickering about, like, I didn't have to carry the emotional labor. Like, shut the fuck up. Like, dude, like so much is happening in the world that is serious. Like, there are serious problems that require serious people to solve these problems. And we're all just so caught up in this myopic vision of things. And yet, by the way, on the converse of that, we have people looking at the situation going like, well, I haven't had sex in this long and I guess I just don't deserve to have sex. Like,
I'll just die now.
Like, what? Like, you have one life you've been given, yeah, and this is what you're going to do with it out of some misplaced sense of loyalty. Like, you're not going to say to your spouse like, hey, wait a minute, I'm not done.
Yeah.
I'm not done with that chapter of my life. Maybe when I'm 90, I will be, but I'm not right now. Like, this is like there, we are at such extremes right now as a culture. Like, there's a part of us that needs to just shut the fuck up about this minutia and think about the big things that are happening. And then there's a part of us that just needs to stop and go, well, wait a minute. We also like, we have one life. We have an opportunity here to do something beautiful with it and to be good to ourselves and to each other. And like, if your partner's not having sex either, if you're not having sex, yeah, at least in theory. So do you think this is what they wanted? Couldn't you just say to them, hey, are you happy? Are you happy? Like, I want to know. Because I think it's strange that we used to have sex and now we're not having sex,
right,
and
so
we're
it's married. So apparent, like, this, you know, is it's such so obvious.
It's the glue.
Yeah.
Like, sex is the glue. It's the thing that turns a roommate into a spouse. Like, it's the glue. And again, it's not the only important thing, but it is an important thing. Otherwise, why would there be so many prescriptions about not being allowed to do it with other people when you're married? Like, it would just be, if it was something like bowling, you can go do it with anybody you want to. Like, go ahead, join a league. Like, you know, sex league. Good idea. Let's write this down.
A bowling sex league. You bowl and you
Yeah.
We'll call it bowling.
You don't have to change your shoes. And you don't have to change your shoes and the balls are lighter. It's great. Oh, God, this could be our $1 million idea. You know what I mean? If we don't hit 100,000 subscribers.
Can I tell you, I've had a bowling business idea my whole life. And it's so.
Wait, is that a sentence you didn't expect?
It's so, you know, ridiculous.
I've had a bowling business idea for, like, I've been sitting on this fucking thing. The zeitgeist could catch up with it. I want to hear it. I think it should be its own segment, but go ahead.
Once once we get rich enough off this that I can just blow frivolous money.
Yeah.
It's a outdoor open air bowling alley in the Caribbean on the beach. The pins are painted like Corona bottles. The bowling balls are coconuts or limes, and there's a roof, but it's open air. So you got the salt water and the moonlight, and you're bowling with a Caribbean theme. And then also we'll turn it into a big then it'll also be a fest. Thoughts? Shark, how much will you invest?
I'm going to offer you $100,000 for a 50% interest in this.
Ooh. Do you like it?
What could go wrong?
Yeah!
Do I like it? No, I don't. I love it.
Love it!
Okay?
It's amazing!
Love it. I mean, what I'll tell you is, you had me at the Corona bottles outdoor bowling in the open air, but then you go, like, you just made a sharp right. And you're like, and then it turns into a fest. Like, I was like, wait a minute. That's not where I thought
Caribbean
bowling was going. But, I mean, that's incredible.
I would love to do that.
Wow.
You know? Forget about the black light.
I genuinely think you need to see therapists. I really do. I just think there's some
bowling
things.
Alley is the breaking point?
I just, you know, it's been building for a while. But I feel like that crystallized it for me. Like, that I was, because here's what I'm saying. I just have this image of you in bed. You know, just like thinking about this.
This is it. I do this.
And somehow it just all of a sudden, then they're all having sex. And you're like, when did that part happen? That's the
Well,
part.
No, that's this. That happened today.
I actually don't think that's a bad idea. But if you take out the fest part of it, and you look at it seriously, I actually think it's not a bad idea.
Like,
if you were like the director of activities for like a high-end resort, you would come up with some cool shit. That's a great idea. Outdoor bowling. Like, it's fun. Be a good time. Make it into a drinking
game.
We'll go
50-50, man. Let's do it.
All right. Listen, you know what? We could do this. I'm in.
All right. To wrap things up on a somewhat serious matter, though, why is it, do you think, that cheating is regarded as such a sin and you know, scarlet letter type behavior, but withholding sex or just making someone exist in a sexless marriage, while not celebrated, is somewhat frowned upon? You know, those don't feel equal to me when it feels like one kind of causes the other and they should be on equal footing.
Yeah. So I would say a couple of things. I mean, one, I think biologically, in every species, including humans and non-human animals as well, the fact that the sexual act leads to or can lead to pregnancy is an incredibly important piece. I mean, if you look at the non-human animal kingdom, you see a lot of examples of behaviors where you have infanticide, patricide, matricide, usually a function of you want your offspring and you only want to care for your offspring and you want your offspring to be cared for and fed. You know, if you do look at cultures prior to or cultures that don't have like a economy of like currency where being like where there was no scarcity of food, you actually still see that the most effective male hunters usually had the widest mate selection, which doesn't actually make sense if there's no scarcity of food. But they attribute this largely to the fact that there was, in fact, some sense among females of, yeah, but if there suddenly was a scarcity, this person would have the most ability to still protect our offspring and feed our offspring and make sure that we had weren't affected by resource scarcity. I was just listening to a conversation Chris Williamson had with, I think, Baumgartner, who is a cultural anthropologist who was talking about exactly this kind of a topic. So I think that's one piece of it. The other, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't say that this is all tied to religion. You know, religion, really, if you read like Freud, Civilization is Discontents, or you look at sort of how the proliferation of religion and the puritanical approach to sex and monogamy and, you know, that all obviously is very much tied to stuff. And we're still dealing with the remnants of that. I mean, we are at the core, you know, primitive creatures like mammals in medieval institutions with godlike technology in our hands. Like, that's going to be a fucking recipe for confusion and disaster.
Big time. When you say it that way, wow, yeah.
But that's what it is, you know? And we really, like, the institutions themselves, the concepts of monogamy, the concept, they have not been tested against the current technological climate. Like, they were not designed for that, you know? Like, you have a car. Your car, If when it got wet from rain, disintegrated, that's a badly designed car. In a very heavy rainstorm, a tornado, if it gets some moisture in it, it's still a badly designed car, but it's a little more understandable. If you go, my car lost structural integrity 2 miles under the ocean, yeah, that's how it works. It's not a submarine. It's a car. That's not a bug. That's the way that a car is. It's not designed for that depth. So I think it's the same kind of thing. Like, I don't know that these sort of puritanical concepts or even, you know, I mean, there's a school of thought that would say that like human consciousness was an error, you know, that it was not something meant to be. We were an aspect of nature that believes itself to be separate from nature,
right?
Like by virtue of our consciousness. You know, Michael Pollan's new book, which is On the Nature of Consciousness Itself, which was a really cool pivot for him to take, having had his prior book being about non-ordinary states of consciousness and psychedelics. His new book, which I just finished, is phenomenal. And it's really very much about this idea of what is consciousness. And I think that you know, the ideas we have about how to regard our biological drives are very much a function of the unique consciousness that is human consciousness. And we've interposed a ton of rules on top of it and structures on top of it. And, you know, I think that we're starting to push the limits of those things. And that's how things get tested as to where they crack.
This is part one of many parts, I believe, about monogamy and sex and marriage. So we'll be covering this topic a lot more. But good start, Jim. I think this is an important one. There's
a lot to be said. And there's a lot of really intelligent people out there speaking about this stuff from a lot of different perspectives, religious perspectives, cultural anthropology perspectives, human, you know, evolutionary biology perspectives. I think we can also learn a lot from looking at non-human animals in this regard. There's a lot out there about nature. Like we are animals. Like we are animals at the end of the day. We have a tendency to like to think we are separate from that, but we are not. We like to think we're not creatures of our biology, but we are. So I think that there are some aspects of that that we need to look at.